Vancouver's new city council met for the first time last Tuesday. With a one-seat majority, Mayor Sam Sullivan immediately moved to scrap on-seat bike lanes on Burrard Bridge, overhaul a proposed sustainable development in Southeast False Creek, and disband all of Vancouver's citizen advisory committees. With less than 48 hours to go before council met again to vote on the motions, engaged Vancouver citizens scrambled to write letters and get on council's speakers list. On Thursday afternoon, councillors faced a handful of reporters and a full gallery of citizens. In the 16 hours of rancor that followed, all but one NPA councillor joined the opposition and voted against the mayor. They voted to defer the decisions on Southeast False Creek and Burrard Bridge, and most dramatically, to reject Mayor Sullivan's bid to scrap citizen advisory committees. Red Eye Collective member Justin Berger was at that meeting, and he joins me in the studio now to tell us what happened. Hi, Justin.
Hello, Jane.
16 hours? Why did the meeting go on so long?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons for that, and one of them was that just that there was a lot of things on the table at this meeting. And the COPE and Vision counselors, there's one COPE counselor, David Cabman, and four Vision counselors. And in particular, Raymond Louis and David Cabman really set out to ask all of the questions that one would reasonably want to ask if these sorts of measures were before an ordinary meeting of council. And so to that extent, to get all that out obviously took a very long time. And I think that the other aspect of that is that I think from the NPA's standpoint, I think they know full well that by jamming this agenda in such a way, it would probably, you know, make for a very long meeting. And one of the outcomes of that would be it would be very hard for ordinary citizens to come and give input. And also that, you know, later on, oftentimes the media might leave because, you know, they're not necessarily getting paid overtime.
So they deliberately, you think, extended it that long, made sure it was going to be really long?
Well, it's obvious when you look at it, if you just look at a meeting agenda and if you just add up, okay, how long is it going to take if each of these speakers only gets their allotted 5 minutes, you know, and we've got these four major items to discuss. And you look, well, that's going to be several hours right there. And so you can go from that. And I think obviously that there's, you know, the accusation from the MPA was that the COPE was doing a deliberate sort of filibustering tactic. And, you know, to the sense that they were asking a lot of questions, that's certainly true, but it was not obtuse in the way we think of the sort of classic group of people standing up to try and delay a decision. It was relatively, you know, focused questioning.
Who came out to the meeting? You said there was a full public gallery.
Well, I think most of the people who came to the meeting were members of the public who sat on these various advisory committees that were to be disbanded by a motion at this meeting. And there were also a number of other people as well who either represented activist groups or other organizations. And there were, you know, a number of people who were just concerned citizens who had become aware of what was happening and wanted to put in an appearance.
And why did you go?
And the reason I was there is because actually I sit on one of those advisory committees. It's called the Bicycle Advisory Committee. And so I was concerned about the future of that committee, and I wanted a number of us from that committee were there, and so we wanted to show that we were concerned and be there. And I think that the other thing, the item that actually I was interested in speaking to was the proposed move to end the lane reallocation on Burrard Bridge, because the way I earn my living is I'm a bike courier in Vancouver. And so I thought, well, I'm representing a group here that's not been consulted, and you know, seeing as I was, you know, fortunate to actually be able to attend this meeting, I felt I gotta go. So that's why I personally was there.
Did the presence of the public, do you think, change the course of the meeting?
I think it did, because what happened is that when you've got the public there, it really prevented the NPA from claiming they were representing our interests by getting these items on the table and getting them done with, because then you have a whole gallery of people saying, no, that's not true. We want these to be considered in a reasonable time so that we can have a reasonable amount of impact. And the other thing about it was that because people, you know, actually came, and some people actually stayed right till 2 a.m. when this meeting finally ended, it sort of held the media to a higher standard, because they, you know, said, okay, well, here are these people who are not getting paid, who are staying, and, you know, because, as I mentioned earlier, that one of the things that often happens is that when meetings like this drag on so long, it gets to the point where the reporters are gone and there's nobody in the gallery, and council is essentially free to act, and there's nobody reporting on what's going on. So that really foiled any attempt to sort of pass these motions under the cover of darkness, so to speak.
Was there any communication with advisory committee members to tell them that the committees would be suspended?
Well, in the course of the meeting, Mayor Sullivan said that he had written a letter to each member of the committees, and there's about 20 committees. And however, nobody has received that letter.
You didn't get your letter.
No, I didn't get my letter. And certainly it would not have been possible for anybody to receive a letter unless it was sent, you know, express post by the time that meeting was where the proposal to eliminate the committees was actually up. So it was a ridiculous suggestion.
Now, the NPA ran on eliminating the Broadbridge trial and also on cutting back on the Southeast False Creek development. So we knew that was coming. But what motivated Mayor Sullivan to try and shut down the advisory committees, do you think?
Well, so Sullivan claimed that he had had some complaints from some committee members, and nobody was identified, and certainly no speakers came forward to express these complaints, saying that they had problems with quorum and also that they had some concerns about whether their input was being valued by council. And so that was the official justification from Mayor Sullivan. One of the presenters from the City Heritage Committee, you know, mentioned that one of the things these committees do is they really keep staff accountable. And they can make it a lot harder for staff to do their job, because they know that they're answerable to this body of people who have a stake in the issue, but who are there of their own free will and who know the issue and can sort of say, ask really tough questions. So that from that standpoint, presumably there are always, you know, people in both staff and council who would find their jobs easier if these committees didn't exist. I think the other thing might be is that at any time a government takes over, there's a want to sort of clean house, and because there's all those behind the scenes people who have worked with the previous government, and so that we want to try and make sure that our legislative agenda is supported by the people who are supporting us, but that's a little bit strange that you would then go and actually eliminate the committees pending review. Because, of course, every member on these committees is appointed by council, and, of course, a new council would get to say yay or nay to anybody who was already on those committees and could nominate anybody whom they chose to sit there. And I think the other, you know, suggestion that was raised at the meeting was, it may simply be that the mayor and his advisors are not really familiar with the standard practices in a government or a business about how you would review a body like this, and they may have thought that it would be standard to suspend such a body while it was being reviewed. And of course, that's the fact of, if you look at how much work these committees are actually doing and how much that work they do over a relatively limited period of time, it's just you can't afford to do that unless there's a really serious problem, and nobody was raising suggesting that there was a really serious problem.
Hasn't there been a review recently anyway of those committees?
That's right. Prior to, there was a review actually initiated by the NPA Council that took office in 1999, and that was continued on into the early part of the last mandate. And Ellen Woodsworth, who was formerly on council, actually spoke to this issue, and she was one of the people who led that review. And so that quite recently, there was a very thorough review of the committee structures. And so that is, and I think that obviously a body, these kind of bodies, that there's always room for improvement, and there's always a need to get feedback and see what's working and what's not. But there was a clear sense that the committees were effective and that there was no reason to have a massive overhaul.
Now, I understand that four out of the five NPA councillors voted with the COPE and the Vision opposition against the mayor's motion. What reasons did they give?
Well, what happened was that after this long, arduous meeting, one of the new COPE councillors, Kim Capri, actually stood up and said, "I'm new here. I've been listening to what's going on. I'm trying to get a sense of things, and I've heard really nothing that would support, the mayor's suggestion that we need to disband these committees while they're under review." And then the mayor suggested, "Well, we've heard some good feedback from the Heritage Committee. Let's say we can retain that one and disband some of the others." And then Councillor Peter Ladner says, "Well, we really can't pick and choose. If we're going to eliminate these committees, we can't make a judgment at this point, and certainly not in this meeting. We either have to get, they either have to all stay or all go." And so at that point, there really was no place to go from there.
Now, the motions on the Broad Bridge and on Southeast False Creek were tabled until next Tuesday. What effect will that delay have on council's final decision in these matters?
In terms of what council actually decides, we don't know at this point. But one of the things that's going to happen is that there's going to be a lot more public input. There's going to be an opportunity now for a lot of the people who didn't actually know that this meeting on Thursday was taking place, and who had the kind of work and family commitments that ordinary people have, that they can actually make the effort to come and speak at this meeting. They have the time to write the letters, and so the debate that takes place on the next council meeting on Tuesday morning will be much more thorough and much more informed than it would otherwise have been. And I think that's really important. The other thing is that the next meeting will be earlier in the day, and there's obviously, because of what the fact that the mayor's own councillors have voted against him, there's going to be more media presence at this next meeting. And so there's going to be a lot of eyes on that decision. And so if people presenting can make a really strong case for why these measures should not be forced through, then that's something that everybody's going to hear, as opposed to just a small group that council represents.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming in this morning, Justin.
Thank you very much, Jean.
Justin Berger is a member of the Red Eye Collective. He also sat on the City of Vancouver Bicycle Advisory Committee in 2004 and 2005.